Jeffrey Archer is one of the best-selling novelists in the world, and he usually writes thrillers set among big names and powerful people, plotting larceny and skullduggery in glamorous places. But his latest book, Paths of Glory, takes on an old mystery. Was George Mallory the first man to climb to the top of Mount Everest in 1924, or did he and his climbing partner Andrew Irvine perish just 600 feet or so from the top? Jeffrey Archer has told both the story of Mallory and imagined the answer to that mystery in his new novel, Paths of Glory. Jeffrey Archer joins us from London. Thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure, Scott. Good to see you. Speak to you again.
Before we get into his history, let me get you to take on this. His body was discovered on Everest during a climb in 1999. The climbing party looked in his wallet for a picture that he carried of his wife and couldn't find it. What's the possible significance of that?
Well, he was married to the most stunningly beautiful woman called Ruth, and he was deeply in love with her. And he had made three attempts on Everest, but in those days you had to take a boat out to Calcutta. You then had to trek across the country to get to the base of Everest. You then had to try and get to the top, and no one had ever been up there, so that took some time as well. So when a man decided he wanted to climb Everest, you're talking about him leaving his home and his family, and he had three lovely children, for 6 months. He always took this particular picture, beautiful picture, I've seen it, of his wife. And he told her on the third time that he went, "I will leave your picture on the top, and I will never return. I will come back to England, and that will be the last attempt." Well, he was last seen at 620 feet from the top. When they found his body, that was 1924, and you must think about Chariots of Fire when you think about 1924. And when they find his body, as you pointed out, Scott, in 1999, the first thing they did was take out the envelope from his ragged jacket pocket, and there was no photograph of Ruth in the wallet. Now, for romantics, that is enough to believe that he might have been the first person to climb Everest 28 years before Sir Edmund Hillary did.
A theme of the book, not to mention Mallory's life, seems to be that the descent is harder than the ascent.
Yes.
Which could also dovetail with the theory that maybe he did reach the top, but the harder part was coming down. And of course, your energy is spent too.
You're very much more tired. And then, of course, when they found his body, it looks as if his, although the missing hands were there, there were brown marks to show that he may have died at 2,000 feet below the top at 20 to 5. Well, he was seen at 12:50 with 600 feet to go. So you've got to explain where that 5 hours went. Mm-hmm. And again, people will point to that and say, during that 5 hours, surely he reached the top, and that was the point he reached on the way down before his tragic fall.
At the heart of the book are very lovely letters Mallory wrote to his wife. Are they yours or his?
Yeah, it's very kind of you to ask. I have to confess, they're fiction. I found the love story between him and Ruth very moving. He falls in love with this stunningly beautiful woman just before the First World War. He marries her within weeks of meeting her. He's a schoolmaster. He doesn't have to go to war because the Prime Minister has said that schoolmasters don't have to go to war. He defies that and says to his wife, "I have to go. It's the honourable thing to do." And off he goes to war and serves. And he gets back to England and is returned to his wife. And she knows that he still has this one desire, this one obsession with this other woman, Chumalunga, goddess mother of the earth, and that if he doesn't get that out of his system, she'll have to live with it for the rest of her life. On the second trip, he goes with a man called George Finch. Now, George Finch was an Australian, and the Royal Geographical Society, a bunch of complete snobs, didn't want an Australian to be the first to conquer Everest. But Mallory said, "I won't go without him." And off they went. And when they made the final climb, Noel O'Dell, Mallory and Finch in 1923, O'Dell fell ill and Mallory remained with him. And Finch went on and climbed to the highest height ever known, which was then 27,800 feet. So he got within 1,200. And they returned to England triumphant. They'd been within 1,200 feet of the top. And then they chose the next team. And Mr. Hinks, the secretary of the Royal Geographical Society, was determined not to let Finch go on the final climb. And he discovered he'd been divorced. And he said, "We can't have a divorced Australian to be the first person to climb Everest." So Mallory goes off on his own. Now, the problem with this, Scott, is simple. We know he was at 600 feet. Instead of him looking up at that peak and standing by his side, this Australian, who was a brilliant climber, they chose a 22-year-old boy who was a fine, fit man, but he'd never been above 5,500 feet before. If they'd allowed Finch to go, not only would they have both reached the top, they both would have come down, and the history of Everest, and indeed of mountaineering, would have been totally different.
Is a man like George Mallory brave or mad?
The answer has to be a combination of both. Mallory knew this was his last climb. He had told his wife, never again. He was with a young man who frankly would have followed him to the ends of the earth. He was such a legend in Britain. He's got 620 feet to go. He knows it's his last climb. He knows he won't be able to return. And the great Geoffrey Winthorpe Young, who was the great coach, as they'd call them nowadays, but teacher in those days of mountain climbing, said the one thing he knew about George Mallory was he wasn't someone who turned back. So public opinion in Britain at the time was that he wouldn't have turned back. And the proof of that, Scott, is when Britain discovered that the great George Mallory had died, they held a memorial service in St. Paul's Cathedral, and every member of the royal family was represented, and every member of the cabinet was there. They weren't in any doubt that he'd reached the top, and he became a legend and a hero to the British. And for reasons that are unexplainable, he has dropped out of our history books. And that was a mystery in itself. And I wanted to bring back, through Paths of Glory, the opportunity for people to decide for themselves when they've read the book, did he make it to the top? Because my book doesn't end with the whole mystery solved. It's a book that gives you 9/10 of the clues and leaves the intelligent reader to put the book down and say, I've made my own decision.
I don't mind telling you, I think he made it.
That's your one of those. You're a romantic, Scott. Underneath, you're a romantic. It's 50-50, Scott. I have to tell you, it's 50-50.
Well, Geoffrey, always good to talk to you. Come back, okay?
Certainly.
Geoffrey Archer speaking with us from London, his new novel, Paths of Glory. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you for having me on the show.